At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
How would you describe yourself? Fun? Sporty? Bold? If that's the case, meet the Kia K4 hatchback, made for motion, adventure, and whatever you might decide to bring along. Or would you say you're more smooth, sleek, refined? If so, there's the Kia K4 sedan. Calm, confident, and ever so modern. Two personalities, two available turbocharged ways forward. The Kia K4 GT Line Turbo and the K4 Hatchback GT Line Turbo. What turbos you? Turbo is available on select K4 trims.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And last night, Lakers fell in game two to OKC, going down 2-0 in the series. D, it was a game the Lakers were up at halftime and even up by as much as five in that third quarter, made a nice push there. Both offenses got going for different reasons, I thought, especially starting in the second quarter. Austin had a nice bounce back game, but I thought in many ways the Lakers lost this game at very specific parts of the game, something I know you feel strongly as well, which we'll get into. So they hung in there for a decent amount, and then blink of an eye, you know, you're down 9 and then it's 15 and game's mostly over at that point. So what are your thoughts on game two?
Very similar to game one, just with sort of different variables that impacted each team's performance. Obviously, I think one of the bigger storylines, and we talked about this in our analysis of game one in the immediate aftermath, and then in sort of the preview of game two, that the bench groups, and particularly OKC's bench group's effectiveness, was going to be something the Lakers are going to have to try to handle. SGA has scored 40 points combined over the first two games. In game two, he was in foul trouble and picked up his fourth foul very early in the third quarter. And the Thunder are just a bit of a machine, Pete, mm-hmm. in that they are able to execute and continue to get quality shots. I think the floor of their defense is so high that they are able to continue to impact the game in ways that force turnovers or get them the requisite stops, that their offense only needs to do so much in order to get them there from a traditional half-court offense standpoint. But the defense-to-offense idea can fuel them in ways that generate the sorts of runs that you were talking about earlier.
They also have other really good offensive players that are giving us hell. A.J. Mitchell and Jared McCain are just cooking us.
Mitchell is playing like Jalen Brunson, this isolation scorer that's like able to get into the mid-range and just knock down shot after shot after shot. Jared McCain is playing like, not to this quality, but a Steph Curry-esque style of basketball in how he's moving around the court and just making open shots. It would be nice if he wasn't as open as he has been, but part of what's going on is the Thunder's ball movement and shot creation, and the reaction to McCain is so big. And so the Lakers are closing out on him, but their closeouts are sloppy and they're late and they're rushed, and McCain is ball faking and sidestepping and getting wide open threes. And the starters together, Pete, for the Lakers played 14 and a half minutes. That's a little low, but in 14 and a half minutes, the starters were even. They played the Thunder even. And I think OKC had one more offensive possession than the Lakers did in that part of the game, and it was even. That means in the other 34 minutes of the game, when the Lakers starters weren't on the court, they got blitzed. Mm-hmm. And the stat of what happened when Shea went to the bench in that third quarter stretch after he picked up his fourth foul, that ultimately decided the game. Mm-hmm. The Lakers were up 5 when he went to the bench. When he came back, the Lakers were down by 13.
Incredible.
And that's the ball game. We could talk about all the factors that went into it. There's one lineup that really struggled. They only played 4.5 minutes. It was a lineup without LeBron and without Marcus. The Austin, Luke,
Jake Rui Jackson.
That group played 4.5 minutes and was minus 13 in those 4.5 minutes. They played like a 2.5 or almost 3 minute shift in the first half, and they stunk. And then they played another like 1.5 minutes in the third quarter, and they were bad again. And to JJ's credit, he pulled the plug much earlier in that second shift than he did in the first shift. But that group was awful. And to be outscored by 3 times as many points as the minutes that you played is a very difficult thing to do. You know, there are many things that go into a loss, but this group played like this, yeah, and it's more than that, but in many ways, it's not more than that.
Yeah, you could zero in on that, and we could have a whole pod about offseason topics about the Lakers, mm-hmm, bench and depth, and because part of that is you've got one guy who can dribble. I went back and watched those minutes and zeroed in on them quite a bit, and for example, one of the plays I thought really typified why they go on huge runs, but is also this bigger meta argument about how the Lakers can be better on offense long term, and OKC really illustrates that. We had a play where Jake had brought the ball up, and his job was to hand it to Kennard at half court. We were running a horn set where the idea was to pass the ball into Jackson on the elbow. A little bit extended, little higher than the free throw line. But Kennard is being pressured by, I think it was Mitchell on that one, and is really having difficulty just getting the pass in the first place. Jackson's also being pressured on ball denial. So when Jackson catches the ball, he catches it like 40 feet from the hoop. He's damn near half court. This is all supposed to flow into a handoff for Austin, which is really the meat and the point of the play. But by the time Austin gets it, literally half the shot clock is gone. And actually, even before that, there's like handoff series stuff. And then Austin eventually gets it really in an attack spot at like 9 seconds left on the shot clock. So he tries this crazy behind-the-back dribble and then pull up from 30 that banks off of the backboard because he doesn't have much time left there. And Caruso gets the rebound, and this is where it flips to the OKC part and part of why they're good. The point of that is that, like, Lakers don't even get into their stuff until there's less than 10 seconds left on the clock. Caruso gets the rebound, dribbles as fast as he can up court in a straight line, dumps off a pass to Jalen Williams, who's trailing the play, knocks down an open 3, right? We don't have that skill set on the team. It's like a trailer 5 that can pull up from 3. But the main thing about that play, D, is there's 21 seconds left on the clock when they're getting an open shot. It's not a transition play, and all 5 guys are back on offense for OKC. They've run the court, and all 5 guys are in the attack zone with 21 seconds left on the clock. So, like, the amount of time that it takes for them to do it, to get into their offense versus us. Sorry, I went down the meta route.
No.
But I think there's a lot of really fascinating discussions to have in this series, D. But ultimately, that group isn't nearly as good as the other group. Like, you were talking about Mitchell and McCain. Like, those guys have killed us all year. Marcus Smart and Jake LaRavia have been 2 of our more important perimeter defenders. Speed neutralizes both of them. Jake is not a guard, and I don't think should probably play for the rest of the series. We could talk about that a little bit later. And Marcus totally gets neutralized by foot speed. So these water bug type of point guards have fried us all year. And Mitchell is sort of like that. He's a little bit bigger than McCain is, but both guys, I think, are killing us for the same reason.
They are. And the difference in depth and quality depth is real in this series. And the Lakers are missing a very important player. That very important player pushes everyone down. a peg. It would make it so that Rui probably doesn't start, and maybe his offense is helpful to bench groups. There's a domino effect. But in reality, Pete, the guard play and ball handling, this is why this series was so much more concerning to me than Houston, because Houston's weaknesses are a true strength for OKC, and Houston's strengths are even stronger for OKC. So it's just like, look, if the Lakers were sort of having trouble in games 3.5, 4, and 5 against Houston, but they found their way to win the series based off of leveraging defensive ball pressure against guards and wings who couldn't necessarily deal with that, you can't do that to OKC. The guys who aren't playing for the Thunder right now, guys like Aaron Wiggins and Kenrich Williams, those guys would be rotation players for the Lakers right now. Isaiah Joe really didn't get much second half run. He got run off the three-point line a couple of times by the Lakers and just calmly dribbled into 18-foot pull-up jumpers along the baseline, made both of them, but he didn't really get much second half run. He's another guy who plays hard defensively. Is he the best defender? He's not, but he plays hard defensively. He knows his job. He's a more than adequate ball handler. He's not a shot creator, but he can handle the ball some and attack a closeout and will make open shots. The difference in quality between what OKC is bringing off of their bench and their general depth in this regard. Again, they don't have their second or maybe third best player in Jalen Williams. Bill Simmons will tell you all about that, or maybe he won't, but
we're going to talk about that later when we talk about the awards again, by the way, that little incident.
But anyways, all they do is just elevate AJ Mitchell. Alex Caruso and Kayson Wallace might be asked to do a little bit more in terms of ball handling. Their defense is right there because they've still got Dort. Guys like Mitchell can be entry points defensively, but they play hard. They've got decent positional size.
I think he's a good defender. I don't think he's a bad defender at all. He was giving us some of those groups that can't dribble hell.
Yeah. He is. He's also like another just guard size guy. And so LeBron was able to like,
yeah, he's fine compared to their other guys. It's like, obviously we're going to go after Mitchell. Of course. Yeah.
My bigger point is what we've just been discussing the whole time and what you were sort of kicking back against right now with this idea is just like, no, all these guys are good and they're more than capable on both sides of the ball. They're not one way players. Jake LaRavia has become a one way player, and defensively he doesn't really have a guy to guard
right
in this
series.
These guys
are too quick for him.
They can put him on Shea, but Shea is like too shifty and too fast for him.
I actually think he can guard Chet. I love the possessions that he has on Chet, but it's a very specific. Overall, I don't think Jake should play. Let's go to break here. Come back. Keep it going.
Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more Messi. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to Messi exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessi. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
How would you describe yourself? Fun, sporty, bold. If that's the case, meet the Kia K4 hatchback, made for motion, adventure, and whatever you might decide to bring along. Or would you say you're more smooth, sleek, refined? If so, there's the Kia K4 sedan. Calm, confident, and ever so modern. Two personalities, two available turbocharged ways forward. The Kia K4 GT Line Turbo and the K4 Hatchback GT Line Turbo. What turbos you? Turbo is available on select K4 trims.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
The general depth idea is a big one. After game one, we hammered Austin because he was not good on offense, I thought his passing was okay, but he had too many turnovers. I thought he competed defensively, and that's great. I love that from Austin. That's sort of been his MO his entire career. Does he take some possessions off there? Sometimes, sure. But look, I was okay with this floor game and truly, truly disappointed with his offensive game overall, particularly as a scorer. In game two, I thought Ayton played pretty poorly offensively, mm-hmm. for sure. And I thought defensively and on the glass, he didn't have the same pop, even though he led the team in rebounding. I thought Marcus was mostly bad on offense. He couldn't buy a shot. And some of his decision-making as a passer is just really poor, Pete.
He's too reckless. When you were talking about Luka bumping everybody down a peg, that would be the biggest positive impact, I think, is against them. And this is part of the reason why I don't think Jake can play is you got to take care of the ball. You can't be that careless and reckless with it. Like, Raj, if you're listening, that is one of the turnovers that I always text Raj about, like, one-handed passes that I hate. Yep. And he tries to make those. You can't make one-handed passes on post-entry passes. And it's just like careless stuff. The one where he tried to fling it over his head and hit the fucking rim. Come on, man. Like, OKC's too good to do that shit against.
So that pass, the one where he knows Jackson is there, he's trying to make the play that is probably the right pass to make or the right play to make.
Yeah, no, you see the vision.
And he chose the, let's go on a hike, and there's a hiking path. Nah, I'm not going to take the hiking path. You see that over there where there's trees and bushes and there might be alligators. Oh, there's a swamp there? I'll just flick the ball over my head. That's sort of what Marcus did in that situation. The way too early Horns entry pass he threw to LeBron, who was still jockeying for position. And LeBron sort of looked like, I didn't even know the ball was coming at that point. And it was just too much of that with Marcus for sure. And look, we hammered Austin. I'm going to be hard on Ayton and Marcus in this way too. But in reality, Pete, Marcus, I think, was plus one or something like that over the game, or minus one. Like, he was very close to being a net neutral while he was on the court, even while saying all of this stuff. Now, he sat during the stretches where OKC went on their runs, and maybe that's coincidence, maybe it's not. But the bigger story is the other team has more good players. You could go off in all of these other directions, but the reconciliation of where the difference in the series is lies in the fact that the other team has more good players who execute at a higher level. And this isn't rocket science. Better players execute at a higher level.
Yes.
This is one of the reasons why they're better.
Yes. However, that is a living, breathing thing that isn't stagnant, meaning that. Sure. So if, like, all those dudes, most of their guys we're talking about are second round picks. Like, that doesn't mean that a player isn't good or isn't talented, but OKC's superpower is in their execution, is in their running the floor and just doing your job and getting into your stuff. And that continuous nature of that. And then, yeah, you find a guy like Mitchell in the second round that can also handle the ball and get his own shot. That's remarkable. It's similar to Austin, right? As an undrafted type of guy. But, like, there's a level of just, like, on top of things that, yes, they are better players, but it goes beyond just the talent to me.
I want to pivot really quickly too, Pete, because obviously the Lakers lost, and obviously we're going to dig into the reasons why, and we've done that now for 15 minutes or so. You mentioned at the top that Austin had a bounce back game. I do want to highlight the fact that I thought he came out and played a mostly very controlled game. The places where he was not controlled, it was due to over penetration and him really hunting some things that weren't always there, trying to force advantage rather than take whatever advantage was there to be taken, or understand there's no advantage to be gained here at all. And so we've got to do something else. But over and over and over again, Pete, like, to start the game, I thought he made two or three excellent passes and that weren't paid off, really. He had a couple of great skip passes that went to wide open shooters and those shots just missed. He had a couple of, like, really good, like, pocket passes to Ayton, who just was missing at the basket. And I was just like, Austin is ready for this environment. And after a game one where both you and I were pretty disappointed in the level to which he played, I just want to sit back and say good for him for bouncing back and sort of showing his level against a team that's geared up to stop him and has a lot of ingredients to really hamper him. And I thought he stepped up to the challenge in this game.
That was one of the things I really wanted to talk about today. And I'm going to be making another offside video on him as well about this game. I really want to get into the reasons why, because I think that's important, again, not just for this game or this series, but long term in Austin's place and, you know, how the Lakers envision him. This was a template game. This was his first really big game as an on-ball guy in the playoffs. And, you know, since he's assumed this role. And I didn't think it started out particularly encouraging, because one of my big arguments with him right now is that he is hitting the turbo button and going on a speed attack at inappropriate times when players are waiting for him, especially OKC's bigs. So his first shot of the game, he tries to drive to the rim, and Hartenstein's there, blocks it, goes off of Austin's back, OKC ball. And I'm like, just pull up. Again, there's like five different things I want to say about this, but just like, don't run into the large people that are waiting for you right there. It's like 70% of my argument on Austin, right? Second play, it's transition, and Austin's got Chet and decides, oh, I'm going to drive right at Chet. And the shot, the play ends with him chest to chest with Chet trying to shoot over Slenderman. And it's like, it gets blocked because, of course, it gets blocked. Like, stop driving right into the. And so I'm like, ah, you don't have to do this. But in between that, the skip passes that you're talking about.
Yep.
His passing in game one was pretty good. The stats do not do justice to his passing in this game. He was making these like 50 foot long, that's how wide the court is from sideline to sideline, passes to like Kennard and Rui, and with great velocity right in the shot pocket. That was one thing that really stood out in that game, was like the velocity of a lot of his passes. And then he hits his first shot on his third attempt, I believe, which was a pull-up where he gets past Wallace, but he doesn't like hit the Jets right away. He comes off of a ball screen with some pace, then he hits the Jets, but doesn't do it so that he goes all the way into the big that's waiting for him in the restricted area. Wallace walks under him, gets an and one. Austin hit, I think, four middies in that game. Overall, I've loved what Redick does and his philosophies. I've been really happy with what he's implemented. One of my minor complaints that I think actually becomes very important for Austin, especially this time of year, is I think there's been a level of dissuasion of him taking that mid-range shot. And like, we really need you to pressure the rim. We really, really need you to get downhill and do all of that, which is like, yes, totally true. But a player like Austin is good enough at that mid-range shot. And listen, I know that the shots around the rim, if you look at it on a spreadsheet, it's better to shoot a shot around the rim than a 6 or 7 footer. If you look up out of the spreadsheet and just watch what's happening, Austin Reeves taking a shot where Chet Holmgren is 4 feet away from him instead of chest to chest with him, where he's trying to shoot over the top of him, that is a higher percentage shot, and that's open. And he was making that shot. And then he was also using those tools of like snaking screens. He did a ton of that. He was putting Wallace in jail, like we were talking about yesterday on the pod. And I thought really lingering in the mid-range a little more and just played with a phenomenal pace. And so, again, we lose the game, but that was the first playoff game from Austin where I'm like, there it is. That's the blueprint. So let's go to break here. Would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more Messi. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to Messi exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessi. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
How would you describe yourself? Fun, sporty, bold. If that's the case, meet the Kia K4 hatchback, made for motion, adventure, and whatever you might decide to bring along. Or would you say you're more smooth, sleek, refined? If so, there's the Kia K4 sedan. Calm, confident, and ever so modern. Two personalities, two available turbocharged ways forward. The Kia K4 GT Line Turbo and the K4 Hatchback GT Line Turbo. What turbos you? Turbo is available on select K4 trims.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
One of the main things that we talked about and that you called for initially with Austin and his ball screen game is putting players in jail. And I thought he did that way more often in this game in terms of snaking the action, getting the defender behind him, and then understanding where his avenue to score was after that. More often than not, I thought this is the right play. Even the play with Chet, I will quibble with you a little bit early in transition in that he did end up chest to chest with Chet. One of the things that Austin does really well is play off of 2 feet. He uses the off arm to bump. And he got Chet off. Now, I get it. Chet is too tall and lanky a defender, and he's too good of a defender to rely on that. But I appreciated the aggression, and Chet got it with a fingertip. It wasn't the same sort of quality block that he got with Hartenstein.
But he got it with a fingertip because Austin had to shoot it freaking 15 feet in the air. Like, I don't even know if that's going in the first place.
My point was that play didn't stand out to me in the same exact way that the game one plays did. Overall, to me, this was a template game for Austin. I appreciated his attention to detail as a passer for sure. And I appreciated the guile as well as the sort of touch and scoring ability he showed in and around the painted area. If I'm going to give credit to another Lakers player, I'm going to give it to LeBron again. There's a level of physicality that LeBron understands he has to bring in a matchup with Lu Dort. And he had a couple of possessions, Pete, where he was just like, you're gonna just let him do this to me right now in terms of like the holding and the grabbing and the mugging and the side front that's coming with a hand around the waist. And LeBron basically was just like, I'm going to literally just move you. And then I'm going to establish position, or I'm going to go and set a ball screen. And if I knock a player down, I knock a player down. And I just thought the stretches of resiliency that the Lakers showed throughout the game, where they were able to either take the lead early in the game or even battle back initially after OKC made their big push and the Lakers got it back to within 5. A lot of that was led by Austin, of course, but also by LeBron and him just being a physically strong and athletic player against a team that doesn't have a lot of guys his size that can deal with him in this exact way. I don't want to get too much into the refereeing stuff, Pete, although I do have strong takes about it, honestly.
Let him fly.
So I'm holding myself back a little bit. LeBron got hit multiple times on drives. He had a finish at the basket where he legitimately got knocked down. He had another finish at the basket where a guy tried to block him from behind and did hit him sort of like in the back of the head. And LeBron's calling for these fouls and he's not getting them. After the game, and JJ basically was just saying, I was being sarcastic before the series started when I said that they do all of this disruptive stuff defensively without fouling. They do foul. And the refs just have to call it. Even more will be made about the sort of huddle that Austin had with a referee. To me, Pete, like, it's very difficult to keep your composure or to keep your wits about you when you feel like the game is sort of being called unfairly or things are not the same going in both directions. And I don't mind a physical game. I don't mind there being missed calls. The thing that's frustrating me more and more about OKC is the physicality that they play with and the flopping, the physicality they play with defensively, and the sort of hunting of ticky-tack nonsense when they're on the offensive side, the falling down, the flopping. That's the stuff that gets me. And I'm very frustrated as a fan watching this dichotomy of we're going to basically harass you defensively and mug you. Well, then I'm entangled with you and I'm just going to fall down and that's a foul. Or I'm going to embellish like I got hit in the face, which Chet Holmgren did twice when he did not come close to getting hit in the face. Sorry, you said lead ripping. I'm sort of halfway speed going here, but it's just like I was pretty frustrated with that aspect of the game. I don't know if you want to chime in with the refereeing stuff.
No, I hate this topic and I have an extremely minority opinion on it. So I think most of the OKC ref stuff is sour grapes. I legit hate this topic. I also have takes on this that most of it is not directed at what you just said, that if I say it in response to you, it sounds like I'm being hostile toward you. But this, like, Shea had four fouls.
Yeah, no.
Like, it's super easy to see it all through one direction. You know, the Kamenitsky brothers, Andy and Brian, they were the original bakers of the blame pie.
Yes.
I love this concept, right? This idea of what percentage of the blame pie does this get? What percentage of the blame pie does that get? The refs, while frustrating, and like LeBron gets a trash whistle because he doesn't fall down and because they don't call fucking body contact anymore. So you can jump into a guy like Bron, and because he's so solid, he doesn't go sprawling 15 feet across the floor after somebody jumps into him. But there was one where he was pissed in the first half. It was around the rim. It was off 2 feet. And dude just jumped right into him. It was absolutely a foul with the body contact. But again, because Bron doesn't go flying, that is not an OKC thing. That is a Bron thing, in my opinion.
Yes.
That is just something that you see consistently. Redick spoke to that, that Bron gets a trash whistle.
Yes.
With respect to OKC, the refs part of the blame pie is so small. And as a Laker fan that's heard so many fucking conspiracy theories over the years from teams that were not as good as the Lakers, that lost to the Lakers, I hate this topic.
My take is very close to yours in that the game's the game. And if you're breaking down the reasons why the Lakers lost, there's a reason why I was even reluctant to bring up the refs and didn't bring them in until like 25 minutes in to a conversation, is there were so many other on-court issues that the Thunder present that just matter more. They are the difference makers in whether they win or lose. They win a lot because they do these things consistently better than the other team. One of the things that bothers me that could be the sour grapes point that you're talking about, but to me, it's just related to my general sort of feelings towards them as a basketball team, is the antics, the nonsense, the bullshit aspect of this. They don't need to incorporate that shit into their game in order to bludgeon you.
They don't, but they should be. You should be taking every advantage. You remember when Kobe used to talk about how he'd study referee formations so he could foul the shit out of you in the blind spots?
100%.
They should be doing all of that. The ref should. So like Kennard got called for a foul where Shea just threw himself into him 2-3 different times on the play. Kennard barely plays defense. Like he wasn't fouling him. He wasn't hacking him at all. And it's like, but that's also something I see all over the league is offensive players just fucking throwing themselves into defenders. And then it's like, oh, well, your arm was not in legal guarding position. But if that's what the rules are, I want all the Lakers to be doing that shit too. And let's not act like Luka and Austin don't do that or Marcus doesn't do that. Remember when they used to, a couple years ago, they had the, oh, we're going to tee you up if you flop.
Yeah, that was.
What happened to that?
That was 20 games of that.
Why didn't Holmgren get a technical for that?
Just like the take foul was, it was like 20 games of the take foul.
Enforce the fucking rules and watch what happens. Sorry for all the cussing.
No. Oh, man. The rough stuff, it is what it is. One of the reasons why I barely wanted to bring it up at all is because it can start to dominate a conversation that it should not dominate.
It's what everybody reflexively goes to on the topic of OKC.
It's a piece of the puzzle, though. And I think it's another challenge the Lakers are finding themselves embroiled in as they face a superior team. And I sort of want to bring back that idea and sort of ground our conversation back into what's actually happening here. The Lakers for, I don't know, Pete, 28 of the 48 minutes looked very much capable of hanging with OKC, maybe even for longer than that when you consider like some of the other runs that they put in where OKC had like sort of pushed it out and then the Lakers were fighting mightily to sort of drag it back in. Regardless of what anyone says, the series looks over, but it's not. OKC did their job as the higher seed and they won two games at home. The prospect of them winning a game within this series requires them to play much closer to what they did in the first half of game two and some of the first quarter stuff they flashed in game one. And the OKC's ability to sort of like win the longer race has been clear in both games. The Lakers need to figure out a way to endure through some of these stretches. And so I get there's another game tomorrow. You're not going to hear from us again before then, but that's the idea I sort of want to end the pod on, is that the Lakers have proven themselves to me to be a worthy opponent that has fallen short in very specific parts of the game. And I think their main challenge is in those stretches, they need to evaluate what needs to be different so that those stretches aren't recurring when we get to game three.
Yeah, we don't have enough time for game three adjustments, but that particular lineup that we zeroed in on that was really bad, I think part of that is because Austin's the only guy in that who can dribble. With respect to Jake, I thought Adu at least provided a level of athletic force that I'd like to see us go in that direction instead. I didn't go the Bronny route. I do think that that is something I'd like to see them try. Sort of, I think Bronny and Adu can be the most athletic version of our bench at the very least. Worth giving it a look, I think. But those lineups that don't have anybody else who can dribble, I think they're really feasting on that with a speed group off of their bench with OKC that's really designed to speed up the game. So if, like, you got Kennard and Jake and guys who are kind of peeing down their leg when they're trying to dribble, OKC is going to feast on that. So I think addressing that, Marcus probably has to play right in that group right there.
And the last point that I will make in counter to the where they were deficient and where they could be better, they should also be examining what they did in that second quarter.
There's good to take away. Mm-hmm.
They were playing really good driving kick basketball. They were getting advantage. I thought Austin's passing in those situations was excellent, but the shot making, the ball movement, they were stressing an Oklahoma City defense that you don't often see stressed too often. And they were creating good look after good look and paying them off with made baskets. And I think that studying how to rectify the stuff that you just talked about and how to amplify the stuff that I just mentioned in terms of the second quarter, that's the narrow pathway the Lakers have to try to walk to win a basketball game against this team.
Yeah, that's the quick 3 to 5 minute version from us on game three. All right, we will be back either on Sunday or Monday, talk about that game three. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a 3-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. 2-1.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yeah. With a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to lowes.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit lowes.com/terms for details. Subject to change.